Welcome to Generations, friends. This is Kevin Swanson. I'm Executive Director for Christian Home Educators out here in Colorado. Also a pastor, but the reason I'm here, I'm a father of five, and concerned about the world in which I'm raising my children. A world in which we're beginning to see more medical tyranny. That's the next frontier for the growing purview of civil government in your life. And what I'm thinking about is a Tom Shiflett case out here in Newcastle, Colorado. Just happened last week, where there's a police raid on this family because their son had a few scrapes and the government wanted to pull him on in and treat him by means of their medical treatment. I take this from an AP story that just came out last week. An armed law enforcement team broke down the door of a family home with a battering ram and took an 11-year-old to a hospital after authorities feared he was not getting proper medical care for what turned out to be a minor head injury. Garfield County's all-hazards response team raided the home Friday night, a day after John Shiflett fell after grabbing the handle of a moving car. Someone, possibly a neighbor, called the paramedics. John's father, Tom, 62 years old, Matt, told paramedics he didn't want them to treat John and asked them to leave. He told them he had served as a medic in Vietnam and he had the skill to treat his son. Caseworkers who later visited the family reported seeing injuries that included a huge hematoma. They went before a judge seeking a search warrant and order for a medical treatment, citing affidavits from the ambulance crew. Following the raid, a doctor recommended John be given fluids, Tylenol, and ice to treat the bruises, according to a copy of the child's patient aftercare instructions. Inappropriate is not nearly strong enough of a word. It was a gross irresponsibility and stupidity, said Ross Talbot, owner of the Apple Tree Mobile Home Park south of Newcastle, who rents to the Shiflets and who witnessed the raid. Is this Russia? I didn't know what we're coming to when they think your kid needs medical care and they send in a SWAT team. Well, ladies and gentlemen, this has certainly raised a lot of concern on the web. The WorldNet Daily has done a number of stories on this. They carry a report from the mother who wrote concerning the attack, one officer grabbed my daughter, Beth, 18 years old, who also had a gun to her face, slammed her down, kneed her in the back, and held her in that position. My sons Adam, 14, and Noah, only 7, lay down willingly, yet they were still forced to put their hands behind their backs and were yelled at to keep their heads down. My daughter, Jeanette, was coming out from the back bedroom when she was grabbed, drugged down the hallway, across the couch, slammed to the ground, she said. The officers then began throwing scissors and screwdrivers across the room out of our reach, I suppose, and going through our cupboards. I asked if I could make a phone call and was told no. My daughter asked if there wasn't one of our rights. The reply was, that's only in the movies, she said. To the SWAT team members, how far will you go in just doing your job if you feel no guilt busting into an innocent family's home, traumatizing young children, stomping the security found therein? Will you follow more horrific orders, she wrote. May I remind you that Nazi Germany, outrageous monstrous crimes were committed by soldiers just doing their job. What will be next? That, according to the mother in this particular case, Tina Shiflett. Also, they explain how the whole thing began. As the sheriff came to the door between 10 and 11, my husband met him at the window. He began to question my husband. My husband spoke with him and answered all his questions. The sheriff then said if Tom would just let him speak with Jonathan, our 11-year-old son, this whole matter would be closed, Tina Shiflett wrote. Tom said, you are saying if I let you speak to Jonathan, this whole matter will be closed? Then Tom called for Jonathan to come to the window. She said, as soon as Jonathan was visible to the sheriff, a SWAT team appeared, shining lights on John's face, and others were bashing at the door with a ramming device. My daughter resisted, pushed against the door to stop them as she didn't know who they were, etc., etc., etc. So, ladies and gentlemen, here are the facts of the case. The social services were investigating the charge of medical neglect. All right, that was the charge, medical neglect. Now, this wasn't abuse. Please understand, this wasn't abuse. The kid, 11 years old, was horsing around, and he got a bruise on his face. And he had a sprained ankle as well. I read that in one report. I don't know if that's true or not, but there were no broken bones here at all. They were investigating the charge of medical neglect. Then the social service workers say that Tom Shiflett appeared to be agitated and non-cooperative. When they were bringing the paramedics into this place, he said he was trying to tell them that they were trespassing. He told them they're trespassing and they needed to leave. And that constitutes somebody being agitated and non-cooperative? Okay. You see, I realize that a lot of families don't care about government officials just coming into your home and taking your children away from them. I know that that's the case. If these guys stomped into your home and wanted to take your kid away who had a bruise and a sprained ankle, you'd be fine with that. You'd be absolutely fine with that because you don't really feel like you have any parental rights or you even want parental rights or you really love your children enough to defend them from the gendarmes, the KGB, or anybody else coming into your home. I understand. A lot of people could care less. But this guy got agitated and non-cooperative about it, okay, because he didn't want tyranny in his home. And you know what? Occasionally you actually need somebody out there standing and saying, no more tyranny. I realize that government wants to be as tyrannical as it can possibly be, but I would rather it not be this tyrannical. Now, it's legitimate, my friends, for a man to stand and defend his property from people who would try to take it away or trespass across his property or take his children away from him. That's okay. That's okay to do that sort of thing. The story is frightening, folks, because any family whose kid falls down, scrapes his knee, or gets a bruise or whatever, I mean, they may have to go through this kind of hassle. The social services investigations, the court orders, I mean, this story is horrific. Now, what we have here is an unusual family. Granted, this is not your average family. It's not even your average homeschooling family. By the way, I read that there were homeschooling out there in Newcastle, Colorado. This isn't your average family. It's a large family in a mobile home park near Newcastle, obviously poor. The father is presented as a little irascible, and even if that's all true, even if he is a little irascible about the whole thing, maybe he's yelling a little bit in the process. Still, no reason for the civil magistrate to get tyrannical here. The fact of the matter is, the civil magistrate should keep his hands off of these people. Just leave them alone. According to biblical law, if anybody cares about what God says about how much the government should interfere in the lives of people, okay, what does God say about this? How does God protect our rights, our property rights, our rights as parents, as families? What does God's law have to say about this? The lex talionis. That's as far as a civil magistrate can get involved. The lex talionis. Eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, life for life. Where there's permanent harm, eyes, teeth falling, coming out, broken bones, and these things happening purposefully by people causing harm in confrontations with their own children, within their own family. If this kind of thing happens, yes, the civil magistrate should get involved. But that wasn't the case here. That was not the case here. This kid was hurt in an accident. And if the civil magistrate should get involved, it should get involved where there's a crime involved. There was no crime here. Ladies and gentlemen, please think clearly on issues like this. In the case of medical decisions, you don't force a man to use your particular brand of medical care. No doctor should ever, ever, ever force care upon a family. That's just plain tyrannical. If a family says, I don't want care, no doctor should walk into that house and say, Tuck, I'm going to take care of this anyway. That just shouldn't happen. Ladies and gentlemen, the bad guys usually pick out the eccentric, the poor, the unusual families first. And if you're not going to stand for the marginal families, if you're not going to take a stand against tyranny for, you know, I don't know, things like unlawful searches and seizures, you know, stuff that was written in the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, 200 years ago. I realize it's old-fashioned and all that, but it has something to do with defending our rights, critical rights. It's this kind of stuff that makes this country the kind of country it's been for the last 200 years, a haven for all kinds of people coming from tyrannies all over the world. Hey, that's our country. Ladies and gentlemen, if we're not going to stand for the marginal, for the eccentric, you're never going to take a stand against tyranny. It just is not going to happen. Folks, what do? You don't elect these sheriffs like this Lou Valerio from Garfield County. You don't elect these guys to be sheriffs because they don't respect the Constitution and they don't respect basic human rights. You go out and you find godly, righteous leaders who understand God's law and will lead by God's law. Those are the kinds of people that you should elect to be sheriff in your county. And by the way, we can talk about social services later, but we've got to do something about social services. Folks, in just a moment, we're going to talk with Tom Shiflett, the man involved in this thing. I want to give him a call. So in just a moment, I'm going to get on the phone. We're going to talk to him. We're going to find out a little more information about what happened out in Garfield County, Colorado. Be back in just a moment.
With literacy rates falling and American schools approaching third world nation status in math and science, parents everywhere are concerned, and they're getting involved. That's why tens of thousands of families across the state of Colorado have turned to home education. For over 20 years, Christian Home Educators of Colorado has hosted an annual conference designed to encourage and inspire families anywhere along the path, from beginners to veteran homeschoolers. Throughout the year, they offer special introductory seminars, retreats, graduations, a news magazine, and a satellite school to aid in the required record keeping. CHEC also offers a bookstore complete with the best resources, tapes, and curriculum, all of which has been carefully chosen to equip and supplement your homeschool program. To learn more about CHEC, visit their website at chec.org.
And welcome back to Generations Friends. Kevin Swanson with you. Today the topic is medical tyranny. It all happened to the Shiflett family out in Newcastle, Colorado, where they homeschool their children out there. They experienced an outrageous example of medical tyranny just last week. And Tom Shiflett, father of this boy who was yanked from his house on Friday night, January 5th, is with me right now on Generations by phone line. Tom, why don't you give us a little idea how this thing got started with your son, John, last Friday?
My boy was goofing around with his sister. She stopped to ask my wife if they needed to use the car. They were passing out handbills, and he grabbed hold of the handle of the car. And then she told him to turn loose, and she thought he had. Well, she pulled forward, and he tripped and fell and hit his head on the ground. Got a pretty large bump from it. Well, they came and got me because he wasn't getting up, and I guess he kind of lost consciousness for a minute. When I got down there, he was moaning. Evidently, a neighbor saw everything, and he knows us, and he saw the family all there, and so he stepped the phone to call 911 to get an ambulance out. But I asked John if he could get up, and he told me, I don't think so. So I picked him up carefully and carried him home, and I think that's what made the neighbor concerned. And the man knows us, and he's talked to us. He didn't do anything. It wasn't him that did anything. So what happened was I got him home, and I took his clothes off. I checked him in the street for broken bones or anything. I asked him if he hurt anywhere, and he said no.
So he didn't have any broken bones at all?
No. And so I came home, put him on the couch, and took his shirt and pants off to see if there was any other abrasions, and asked one of the older children to make me an ice pack, put on John's head.
Yeah.
And in the process of doing all this, my landlady delivers his farm milk on Thursday, and she had stopped with the milk and was talking to my wife out front, and the ambulance pulled up and said that they had got a call that there was an injury here, and a child that was injured, and they wanted to know if they could check the child. And my wife said, well, just a minute, let me talk to my husband. And she came in the house without shutting the door, and they followed her right in. Well, when she asked me, she touched my arm, and I looked up at her, and then I seen out of the corner of my eyes these other people, and I looked around, and I said, well, what are you people doing here? I said, I didn't call an ambulance. I didn't call anybody. They said, well, we got a call, and we had to respond, and we want to check the point. I said, well, you can look at him, but I said, you can't examine him. I said, there's nothing wrong with him. And they looked at him, and they checked the dilation, and if there was any dilation in his eyes, there wasn't. And they said, well, he's okay. But because it was a pretty large bump, they wanted to take him to the hospital. And I said, no. I said, no, you're not taking him anywhere. I said, I didn't call you people and you're trespassing, and I want you to leave. And my landlord by that time was there. He has a voluntary fire department, and he monitors all the calls, so I imagine he heard it. He came over from the call. I never did ask him.
You didn't think it was serious enough for him to go to the hospital at this point?
No. Because the bump was quite large. His eyes weren't dilated. He could answer my questions. He was very coherent.
Yeah.
And with the training that I've had, if he'd have hit his head hard and there wouldn't have been a bump, I would have took him to the hospital myself.
Right.
Because by that time, his eyes probably would have been dilated. That's a sign of internal injury.
Hmm.
Well, I knew he didn't have any internal injury because the bump was swollen up on the outside. And I checked his eyes myself, and I told him I would monitor him, and if he got any, showed any signs of being worse, I'd take him to the hospital myself. Well, one of the ambulance attendants, well, I guess the first respondent, got kind of upset because I wouldn't let him examine him. They brought in a med kit, and she started pulling stethoscopes and blood pressure straps. And I said, whoa. I said, no. I said you could look at him. I didn't say you could examine him. I said, I want you people to leave. You're trespassing.
Yeah.
But she got kind of upset. They all went outside because Ross told them, my landlord, he told them, you guys are causing more problems here than you're helping. He said, why don't you step outside? And he took them outside. Well, she felt that the child should go to the hospital.
Why was that? Why did she want him in the hospital?
Well, because I guess there are certain laws in Colorado that says if you don't take your child to a hospital to get medical aid, that's child abuse.
Yeah.
Well, the thing in the whole matter is no one has taken my training into consideration at all. I'm an idiot. I don't know what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I was the American taxpayer in 2 months spent over $18,000 training me. That was just in 2 months. I had schooling and training in the Army for a solid year. Nobody's asked me what it was. I took care of stuff overseas that most of these medics have never even seen.
But it's got to be pretty serious before that young man needs to be in the hospital. I mean, you can't say that for every bruise a child needs to be taken to the hospital. That doesn't sound right to me.
Yeah, but it's just a law. If the ambulance drivers don't have a release from any medical service, which I didn't know that. They wanted me to sign a paper, and I said, I'm not signing anything. Because I didn't know. I didn't even ask them what it was. I said, I didn't call you people. I don't want you here. You're trespassing.
Mm-hmm.
And Ross will tell you, I did not raise my voice. I did not get mad at them. I wasn't angry. And the ambulance driver said, or the ambulance person said that I was, that they left the house for their safety, supposedly.
But you didn't have brandish an arm. I mean, you weren't yelling. You weren't upset with these people. You were just saying, "Hey guys, you're trespassing, and I'd rather you not be in my house right now."
Yeah. I didn't call them here.
Yeah.
as far as I was concerned, they were completely out of their jurisdiction and territory and what they were doing and everything. But I wasn't rude to them at all. They said I was, but. My landlord and his wife both were standing here in my front room when all that went on. They tell you what happened. And then what happened after that was, I guess, the ambulance driver or the person that was the first respondent, she called the sheriff's office and said I wouldn't give this boy medical attention, which, in fact, that's what I was doing. But like I said, it's a matter of definition there in law. Mm-hmm. The medical attention's got to come from a doctor, I guess.
Right.
And so they came out later that night. They never come here before 10 o'clock and knocked on the door, and I talked to them through the window because I don't open my door to anybody that knocks after 5 o'clock.
Sure.
And if people know me, they just walk in. Mm-hmm. That's been a policy in my house forever. But if people don't know me, they're knocking on the door. Well, I don't know who they are. Then I answer through a window. And they said that they got a report from the ambulance service that there was a boy injured here. And I said, yeah. I said, he fell and bumped his head. He said, well, he wanted to know if everything was all right. I said, yeah, everything's okay. I said, he's fine. He's got a bump on the head. And they said, okay, that's all we need to know. And they left. Well, next morning when I got up, I heard a knock on the door. I just got dressed, walked into the living room, heard just knock. Went to the door, here's two social workers from social services demanding to see the boy because they got a report from the ambulance service that I had refused medical attention for this child, and that was against the state law, which I wasn't aware of. And so I had to go get him. I had him in the bathtub taking a bath, and I had to go get him, dry him off, put him in my bathroom, bring him to the door. These people just were so... I found out later I didn't have to do that, but they were so persistent that they told me that if it was a matter of money, they could pay for they could pay for this treatment. I said, well, you could. I said, but will you? Well, they never would answer me.
Mm.
Well, after they looked at the boy, they decided that he needed to go to the hospital. Mm. Now, why they decided that, I don't know. They never did give me a reason. But I guess because of their evaluation, he needed medical treatment. But because of my evaluation, he didn't. Now, what I want to know is, are the Colorado laws against the parent treating their own child?
Yeah.
That's basically when I had the training that I've had.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so they said that if I didn't let them take him to the hospital, they would get a court order.
Wow.
I said, well, if you do, bring an army.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I said, yeah, bring a club, you know, whatever. Yeah. I was telling them I wasn't going to go for that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what they did. They brought an army.
Yeah.
The next time, that night, about 7 o'clock.
We're talking Friday night now.
Yeah, this is Friday night. Mm-hmm. About 11 o'clock, two more officers knocked on the door. And they told me, now look, Mr. Schiffler, if we can just see John, this whole thing will be over with.
Yeah.
And I said, you're telling me that if you can see my son, this whole thing will stop? And they said, yeah. I said, okay. And I called John, and the minute he came in the kitchen and they could see him in the window, I noticed from the neighbor's porch light a whole line of men coming up my front fence line, my front yard line.
So they were lying to you?
And, yeah, these guys were all, and I knew exactly when I saw them what was coming down because, like I said, I've been in the Army. I know what this is all about. I've seen the SWAT unit next door do the same thing, the guy next door. And I told the kids, get away from the door. I said, get away. And about that time, my older daughter was standing in front of the door, and about that time, the door went blam and hit her. And,
oh, boy.
She pushed the door back shut. It doesn't have a latch on it.
Right.
And they hit it again.
Mm-hmm.
I got two big holes in a hollow core door that I've got to fix. And they came in at gunpoint, put a gun in Hannah's face as my older daughter pushed her up against a little closet here by the door. Put another gun in my other daughter's face, pushed her in the front room, pushed her on the floor, and put a knee in her back, told her to put her hands behind her back. And my other daughter was walking down the hall, and a fellow went down the hall, grabbed her, and pulled her down the hall. And there's not much room. I have a bookcase and a couch right at the beginning of the hallway, and there's not much room for two people at one time. But he came through there, pulling on her, and pulled her over the edge of the arm of the couch. And she tripped, and he pushed her down on the floor. Told them to put their hands behind their back. My two other boys, one of them 13, he was smart enough just to get down. He told his little brother to get down on the ground. And they were yelling at him, put your arms behind your back. Don't move. Don't look up. Put your head down, you know. And they had me in the kitchen, up against the kitchen cabinets, they handcuffed me with plastic cuffs. They pushed my wife down on the bench, flat on her back. They handcuffed her with plastic cuffs. They handcuffed Hannah with plastic cuffs, my older daughter, and set her at the table here. And then my wife asked them, can we make a telephone call? And they said, well, when we leave, you can do whatever you want to do. She said, and Hannah said, well, I thought that was one of our rights. And one of the officers said, well, that's only in the movies.
Yeah.
And there was at least 12 of them here. The kids told me there were five or six in the front room, and I count that many in the doorway and in the kitchen here. So there was at least 12 of them, if not more. The two officers I seen at the door when I was talking to, I never seen them again. They must have left, but they weren't in SWAT uniforms. These other guys all were. They told me that if I was cooperate, and they said, we can see you're cooperating, you know.
Yeah.
I wasn't offering resistance. If they'd have told me they had warrants, I would have just let them in the house.
Yeah.
I'm not going to resist law officers to come to the house and say, hey, we have a search warrant and warrant.
But nobody told you they had a warrant?
They never told me.
Oh,
the first two officers never told me anything.
Oh,
and the sheriff constantly says that we sent two officers to inform Mr. Shiflett that we had warrants. But they didn't do it. Everything the sheriff said in the Post Independent, in his column, almost everything he said was a lie. I have never met the man.
Yeah.
I have never talked to him before or since he's been in office.
Hmm.
I wouldn't recognize him on the street. Even if they gave me a picture to look for him, I probably would miss him. Where he made all the statements, I don't know. He said I was a self-proclaimed constitutionalist. I didn't even know what that meant. I still don't know what he meant by it. But I thought everybody that was under oath in a public office, they have to take an oath to be sworn into office. And in there, it states that they will protect the Constitution from treason, foreign and domestic. Well, I thought that was a constitutionalist.
I guess they don't stand by the Constitution much anymore.
Well, that's what I'm wondering.
Yeah.
Constitution seems to be in court a worthless piece of paper unless they use it. If you use it, you can be held in contempt of court. Now, I don't know what the deal is here in America, but things are getting worse and worse.
Yeah. Yeah, there's an old word for what happened there, and it's tyranny, and I think Sam Adams and Patrick Henry, George Washington would recognize that to be precisely tyranny for officers to beat down a door for a kid who's got some bruises on his face. And I think it sounds to me like the irony of this thing is that these guys traumatized and hurt your family way more than your little boy was hurt.
You think my children are going to trust a police officer in a uniform now?
I hear you.
You know, my youngest boy was crying, I found out. And I said, "Were you scared?" He said, "No, Dad." I said, "Well, why were you crying?" He said, "Well, I thought I'd never see John again."
Oh, man.
Now, that's what was going through his head.
Yeah.
I had to tell my son to come out of the kitchen. He was telling the cop, "Don't touch me, don't touch me." Well, they didn't touch John. They knew that's who they came to give. They didn't want any problems with him, so they didn't touch him. And I had to call him out of the back of the kitchen, tell him, "Come here, stand by me, I'm going to tell you something." I said, "These people have a court order that says that they can take you to the hospital. I want you to go with them." And I said, I want them to bring you back. I said, they said that they were going to take him, and they would call me and tell me where I could pick him up. I said, no. I said, "You're going to take him, you're going to bring him back." And the officer said, "Well, we can do that." Well, after they examined John, the officer there that was with him said, "I can't take you home. I can't take you back." He had to come back with the social worker. Social worker met him at the hospital, and they were questioning John. And they asked him, the woman asked him, do you feel safe at home?" And he looked at her and he told me. He said, "I told her I feel safe at home. I do in this hospital." And they gave him a complete CAT scan. And the doctor found absolutely nothing wrong with him. And they sent him home with instructions to drink plenty of water, which I told him he's going to have to do. And that he could take Tylenol or ibuprofen for pain if he had any. And down at the bottom it said further instructions. It said keep an ice pack on the bruise.
Which is exactly what you were doing.
But yeah, and I. But the thing is, they took him out of my care to give him medical care. Never once gave him an ice pack in the 2.5 hours that he was gone. And then told me to put an ice pack on the bruise, which that's what I've done. Now, I knew how to treat him. But see, that's completely ignored because I'm not qualified.
Tom, as you see what these guys did, the sheriff, the social services, the court order, et cetera, as you see what these guys were doing, why do you think they did it? Why did they jump in? I mean, the sheriff said he was concerned about the child.
Well,
you think that's the true story?
Yeah, they were really concerned about him. They took him out in the night, the cold air, and the 2 hours half he was gone, he contracted a common cold and gave it to his other two brothers.
Yeah.
And I'm going, that, you know, child abuse.
Yeah.
Child abuse.
Yeah.
It's child abuse not to give your son medical care, which is exactly what I was doing. But see, the medical care I gave him is not qualified.
So why did they jump all over you in this tyrannical power play? I mean, what were they doing?
Well, because I guess they have the authority to do it.
Hmm.
I don't know why they did what they did.
Yeah.
They did it because that's what they wanted to do.
Yeah.
And I told these two social workers my training, and I said, "Now you tell me, who's more qualified to care for my boy, me or you?" And they didn't want to answer the question. I said, no, answer my question. And at that time, Ross Talbot was standing behind him. He's my landlord. He'd come over.
Hmm.
For some reason, I don't know why, but the guy looked down at the ground and said, "You are." I said, "Did you hear that, Ross?" He said, "I sure did."
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
And they're sitting right there telling me that I'm more qualified to take care of my boy than they are, but they wanted him to have medical attention. And so they went and got a court order, drug him out of the house by force at gunpoint, kidnapped my kid, took him to the hospital. Then they brought him back, and the deputy sheriff that came back, I guess came back for the protection of the social worker, because the social worker brought John home. And I was getting ready to go to bed. It was about 2:42 or something like that. And I just happened to stand up off the couch and look, and I seen some lights outside. The cars go up and down the road all night long. 1 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock. I've seen that happen when I get up, get a drink of water at night. But I noticed these lights didn't pass. They stopped. Well, I looked out. I come to the kitchen, looked out the window, and I seen the sheriff and the social worker. But I didn't see my boy. So I immediately went to the door and opened it, and John walked in the house. Evidently, he just jumped out of the car.
Yeah.
And I didn't see him. He came in the house, and I gave him a hug. I said, "You okay?" He said, "Yeah." And the sheriff came to the door, and he said, told me his name. I couldn't remember what it was. He introduced the social worker to me, who was the same woman that had came that Friday morning. Now this is 2:45, 2:40-something. Saturday morning, and she told me, she looked at me kind of sheepishly and said, "Well, the doctor did a complete CAT scan and couldn't find anything wrong, and he's got an aftercare sheet." And I looked at the aftercare, he told you what the aftercare sheet said. So I just looked at it kind of disgusted, and I said, "Well, thanks for the trouble,"
yeah.
And I shut the door.
Yeah.
And the rest has all been interviews on radios and newspaper articles and people calling me from all over the United States for the last 3 days. I even got a call from Canada.
Wow. Tom, I appreciate the story because, you know, I'm a father of five. I've got five little children. I homeschool out here in Elbert County, Colorado. And this could happen to me.
It could happen to you.
Yeah.
This did happen to you. Even if you're not married and don't have any children, you're a son of some father. It happened to you.
Yeah.
It happened to every American in this country.
Yeah.
When they did what they did to Randy Weaver, they did it to you. When they did what they did at Waco, Texas, they did it to you.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, people have got to wake up and they have got to start coming together somehow to stop this.
Mm-hmm.
There are laws out there that they ignore.
Yeah.
I've looked at the United States Code and Title 18. If you look at Section 241 and 242, these people could go to jail for the rest of their life. I don't want to see that happen, but I sure in the world don't want these kind of people in public office that are supposed to be serving the people.
Well, we got to take a stand against the abuse of power everywhere, and what are you going to do from here on out, Tom?
Well, I don't know. I got a call this morning, and possibly I've got a lawyer, and I'll just go from there.
Yeah.
I don't know if people have been reading the Post Independent, but yesterday's paper, or day before, had a front page article in there about a man being tased by a cop in rifle repeatedly for nothing. And they took him to court. I guess they settled out of court for an undisclosed amount, which meant, you know, hey, we don't want to fight this anymore. It's going to cost us money, and we're probably going to lose. There was another one right after the finish of that story on the next page about a man had been repeatedly tased some 14 times.
Mm-hmm.
And while they had him in cuffs on the sidewalk, they tased him at least four times while he was in cuffs on the sidewalk. And the reason they did that was because they didn't want the man to try to stand up being drunk. He might fall against the wall and hurt his head.
Tom, last question.
Instead of having him stand up and fall over, we're just going to keep tasing him.
Yeah. Tom, last question for you. What are you telling your children? Obviously, they've been traumatized by this. What are you telling them at this point? Don't be afraid. Let's move on. What are you telling them?
What, about what?
About this. I mean, are your kids are obviously somewhat fearful, somewhat traumatized. What are you telling them?
I told them, hey, you know, we've got to go on with our lives. We've got to. You can forgive, but you're not going to forget it.
Yeah.
You're not going to forget it.
Yeah.
I just want them to go on.
Mm-hmm.
We whole school, you know, my home school, but we're just going on with life.
Yeah.
This morning, I was outside when you called. I was on my way to get a radiator for my car so I can get it back on the road. You know, life goes on. You can't let it stop you.
That's right.
I've been in one war. Bullets don't scare me anymore. Yeah. You know, I don't want to see anybody come into my house shooting. I came home from Vietnam. I sold all my guns
mm-hmm.
for $25
mm-hmm.
because I know what they are. I know what they're for.
Yeah.
And that's sickening.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't volunteer to go to Vietnam. I was drafted mm-hmm. under the pretense of war.
Mm-hmm.
That too is illegal, but that's another subject.
Yeah. Okay. Well, hey Tom, thank you so much. I appreciate you sharing that story because that's going to impact a lot of folks out there.
Okay.
Thanks a bunch, and you have a great day. God bless you and your family.
You too. Thank you very much.
Bye bye.
Bye.
And that's the story, folks. That's an outrageous example, my friends, of medical tyranny. And I'm not sure they had legal backing to get that court order. I spoke with Representative Kevin Lundberg here in Colorado several days ago, and I doubt that they had reasons, legal reasons, to issue that court order. If they did, the law needs to change. Either the law needs to change, or somebody's got to get sued on this particular story. My friends, it's important to stand the line against the ever-encroaching lines of tyranny. We know that tyranny inevitably wants to grow. George Washington said, government is like fire. It's a dangerous servant and a cruel master. It's not to be trusted. That's the way the founders of this nation felt about it, and that's still the way I feel about it 250 years later. My friends, you've been listening to Generations, and you can interact with this program by emailing me at host@kevinswanson.com, and you can hear the program anytime anywhere in the world at kevinswanson.com. Please get your friends and family members tuned into this program, kevinswanson.com, where we lay down a vision for the next generation.